Second half of the program begins right now. Two-minute drill is how we start it around the country. 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people, covering the stories where they are happening as we come to you live. Straight out of the Rally House studios, we begin in Cincinnati, Ohio. That's where Mo Egger is, WCKY in Cincy. Mo, how are you, sir?
I am great, Sarim. What's going on?
Well, I don't know. We're a little bit more optimistic, I think, about our football team than probably the people in Cincinnati are now. What the hell happened to that Bengals offense?
You know, I wish I could tell you. I don't probably have enough time to tell you. A lot of things. First of all, they had a bad offensive line last year. They let their best two offensive linemen get away. Second of all, they have an offensive coordinator, and I am usually the last person that likes to blast things like play calling and things like that, but they have an offensive coordinator who's in over his head. Third, they have a quarterback who's limited, and when he's not protecting the ball, he's not good enough to overcome his own mistakes. Finally, I think they have a head coach who has set a tone of just a lack of urgency, very passive. It's all those things. You know, fans love to point the finger in one direction or the other, and I'm not sure in this particular case that applies. I think this is a systematic failure, but it's surprising. I didn't necessarily think they were going to be as good as some people did in terms of their offense, but I would have lost a lot of money had I wagered that they were going to, you know, not score a touchdown or that they would score a touchdown in the first two games.
Human nature is to try to make things black and white, to try to find one villain, one thing to pin down. It is many things, as you just said. What's getting the most grief, though? Is it Dalton or is it the coaching? Like, I just talked to Bob Glauber, our NFL insider, and he's talking about, you know, making a quarterback change. I'm like, listen, this guy threw 25 touchdowns and 7 INTs in 13 games 2 years ago and was 10-3 as a starter. He didn't just forget how to play quarterback. I would villainize the coaching.
I think if you were to take a poll here, I think most would say the person who's most culpable for any Bengals failure is the head coach. Because Marvin Lewis has been here for a longer time. He's, in many respects, the face of the franchise. You know, he can be, like most NFL head coaches, really prickly and defensive when his team loses. And so I think he would take most of the ire. But, you know, Andy Dalton, I think with him, it's a resignation. I think it's an understanding that it's really hard to find somebody better, but that they're never really going to get to another place unless they do, but that's also really hard to do. So I think with Andy, they kind of realize they're stuck. You know, it's hard to get a quarterback as good as Andy, much less someone better. I think most people go, you know what, you could probably find somebody who can be better than Marvin Lewis, especially in the big games. And so I think most people would point the finger at Marvin, but you know, Andy certainly hasn't gone without his critics, especially last week after the way he played against Baltimore.
Yeah, no, trust me, I've seen it now. Alex Smith has never bottomed out the way Andy Dalton did. In fact, according to QBR, only two guys have ever bottomed out worse than Andy Dalton did in that opener. But it's kind of like the Alex Smith scenario. I mean, it's like, hey, we know he's good. We just also know he can't be great. So when do you make that move to try to go get another guy? That's the big question, and it's not easy to do. Look, Marvin Lewis has looked like he would be out in the past. Would a losing season this year actually bring about change this year?
I'm going to guess a losing season will. You know, we make it sometimes. You use the term black and white, and I think the same thing applies. We make it sometimes black and white with him. He's got to win a playoff game, or he's going to be gone. Well, no. I mean, the Bengals have never held him to that standard. I do think there is some pressure on him, or has been some pressure on him, coming into the season to have a better year and just show that the team is moving forward and prove that he's the guy to move them forward. He doesn't have a deal beyond this season. The last few years, they've given him one-year contract extensions. This is a Bengals organization that doesn't pay people to not work for them. And so, you know, he's always had the soft landing of being able to come back the following year. He doesn't have that this year. And so, you know, I do think there's something to the suggestion that if they don't have a winning season, he's going to be gone. But I also, you know, I talk to a lot of people who say, you know, they're not entirely sure that Marvin Lewis really wants to coach beyond this year. Remember when Hugh Jackson left to go coach the Cleveland Browns, there was talk of a succession plan being offered to him. Well, you don't offer that if you don't have an eye towards leaving, if you're Marvin Lewis. And so, You know, I think there's a decent chance he's not here. I think there's a good chance he's not here if they don't have a winning season. But I'm not sure that it's going to be, you know, the Bengals kicking him to the curb. I think if it happens, there's a chance that it's actually something that's, you know, very, very mutual.
Yeah, or engineered by Marvin Lewis. All right. Be interesting. Yeah. We'll see if they can turn it around. Mo Egger in Cincinnati. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate the time. Have a great weekend.
Anytime, man. You too.
Tennessee.
Brayton Gall, 102.5 The Game in Nashville, Tennessee is next. Brayton, how are you?
Doing well. How are we?
Not too bad. And Cat fans, K-State fans, headed down to Nashville to see their Wildcats take on the Commodores. And well, what are they getting into? We're kind of surprised up here that the spread is not bigger, that K-State isn't laying more points. Is that view shared, or is there much more of a belief in Vanderbilt than we have from afar?
No, I'm very, very much looking at that number going, that seems a little low for me, top 20 team. I think Vanderbilt, because they've played very well in two games that they probably should play very well in, which is not necessarily always what they've done in the past, that maybe there's some excitement here. I think it's going to be a lot of purple in the crowd. I was just driving through downtown just a few minutes ago, and there's a lot of Kansas State fans walking around downtown Nashville, as there are every as there is always with the road team of any sport that's being played in Nashville these days, it seems like. But a lot of purple. So I just, you know, I just yell your Rock Chalk out the window every time I see him. But it's a lot of fun to see them, because I'm a huge Bill Snyder fan just in general. You know, obviously dealing with the health issues. I think Jesse Ertz is just that much better than Kyle Shermer at quarterback. So I'm not really sure what – I mean, this is one of those lines that you sit up in your chair and you go, what does Vegas know? And that's the one angle that I go, those guys in Vegas, they don't build pyramids and casinos of gold because they're wrong all the time.
Yeah, and you're right about that. And, you know, I discussed this. Look, they gave a contract extension. Vanderbilt goes 6-6 last year and then loses in a bowl game for a final record of 6-7. And you're like, okay, yeah, ho-hum. And James Franklin had it up and running. That's not really at the level that James Franklin had it. Yet they turn around and go out and give a contract extension to Derek Mason. They did win two very impressive games in the SEC at the end. Is this a program, no matter what it is right now, that is definitively on the rise? Because they certainly, you don't hand out that contract unless you think it is.
Well, and that sort of speaks to the bizarre nature of Vanderbilt as a college football program. They're going to be very conservative. I mean, he could probably go 2-10 this year and keep his job. So, I mean, it's just they're very conservative when it comes to making a move. Derek Mason is an incredibly well-respected human being, and that goes a long way. Just look at Lincoln, Nebraska. I mean, you could win 9 games, but if people like you, you might keep your job. It wasn't the same for the guy that was in charge in Nebraska before that. So, Derek Mason is an incredible guy, and I've had a chance to get to know him, and he's very genuine. He does things the right way. He's just a great ambassador. So I think expectations for Vanderbilt should be 6-6. I think if you get to a bowl game more times than you don't, I think you've done a successful job at Vanderbilt in a dumpy stadium with 38,000. Like, James Franklin had to beg people to come to the game, and they were a 9-win team, and they still couldn't sell out the stadium. So it's just a hard place to gauge. It's not a normal college football job. And so I think him going 6-6, I think, was a huge step in the right direction. I don't know if Vanderbilt's ever going to be a program on the rise like we think of when we think of big programs sort of growing and developing into championship contenders under good coaches. I don't think that's ever the case for Vanderbilt. I don't think that's ever what they're going to do and what they're ever going to be. So, but are they going to have a really sound, fundamentally sound defense that plays physical football? They're going to have they've got a great running game. I really can't wait to see both running games here and both offensive lines. I love K-State's offensive line. Vanderbilt's got 3 really good running backs. So I think it does come down to Ertz being just better than Shermer, but there's more to the program at Vanderbilt now than meets the eye. I don't know if it ever gets to a point where they're routinely winning 8 or 9 games. I just don't think that's a reasonable expectation for Vanderbilt.
All right, let's talk about Tennessee at Florida. Let's talk about Butch Jones. Where is the fan base on Butch Jones? I would think it's win or else for him, right?
You know, that's really weird. Butch Jones is such a bizarre sort of case study for fan expectation, because I use the term national championship DNA with about the top 18 to 20 programs in college football. And a lot of that has to do with your resources and your access to players. And that includes teams that basically have won national titles in the last 50 years. I mean, you can look at the list. They're all the same teams. There's not a bunch of random teams winning national championships like there were in the 50s and 60s. And Tennessee is one of those teams. So they have national title aspirations, national championship DNA, but their program was a dumpster fire when he took over. So he's done a really good job rebuilding the program. Last year, though, he lost some games he shouldn't have, and that basically turned – and then his complete inability to understand when not to say really cheesy, stupid things, that you can't lose an important game and then come out and say something's cheesy and stupid and cliche 2 days later. You can do that if you won the game, and everybody does. All the coaches do. But you can't do it when you lose. So total tone deaf to, like, the temperature of his fan base has been a problem. But they're 17-4 in their last 21. As Butch Jones has told us a million times, they're one of only three teams in the SEC to win nine games the last two years, which Butch Jones has told us a million times. And they're the underdog on the road this weekend. So I think there's an element of they go down there and pull an upset this weekend that there's some house money there. Two straight wins haven't happened since 1971 over Florida for Tennessee. So they're in, you know, there's a lot of positives just to go along with the negatives, which makes him such a bizarre case study in expectation and fan relationship with their coach.
Georgia and LSU at home after this Florida game, not immediately after UMass, then Georgia, and then the LSU game is on down the road. At Alabama is one that, you almost chalk up and say, hey, great, we're supposed to lose it, so we lose it there, and we don't give up a home game.
Right.
So it is a schedule that looks like it could be very good for Tennessee, but this is a big one. They got to get by this one. Brayden Gall there in Nashville. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Yep, absolutely.
RJ Choppy, 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, Texas is next. RJ, how are you?
I'm doing good, Sarin. How are you, man?
Pretty good. I assume you've probably talked numerous times to different legal experts about how this Zeke Elliott thing is going to play out. What is the word? Is it ultimately like I took him in the second round of a fantasy football league draft because I said Tom Brady played the whole year. He was able to hold up the suspension. Like next year, I can see Zeke Elliott being suspended for four or six games or something. But my expectation, as an armchair legal expert, is that he's going to play all year. What's the expectation there?
And you got him in the second round. You obviously didn't draft in Dallas. You went in the first round just about every draft I was in. look, nobody knows. We've had different guys on who say that, look, the NFL at the end of the day has the right to do this, and no judge in their right mind really wants to go down the road of telling a company how to run their organization privately in terms of disciplinary matters. But that certainly happened with last week. So what now? Honestly, the NFL is going to try to appeal the appeal, and they're going to try to get the very same judge to overturn his appeal and have a stay, but they're going to go to the Fifth Circuit Court. And honestly, the way it was written by the judge in Texas last week, the way it came down, the way he wrote it, made it pretty difficult for the NFL to win the appeal. They're going to have to go back and go to court and have the courts decide what the punishment might be, kind of like a Brady.
All right, so we'll find out. We stay tuned and see how it goes. Cowboys looked impressive in that first game against the Giants. Now they go up to Denver. What is your expectation? Denver got a nice win on Monday Night Football against the Chargers. Are you confident that the Cowboys win this game?
I wouldn't say I'm confident that they win the game only because Denver's pass rush is very good and their corners are elite. The Cowboys don't have good secondary. They don't. And the Broncos have two very good running backs. Plus, man, that crowd is a game changer. So I don't know that the Cowboys, I'd say I'm confident they're going to go out there and win. But I will say that I'm confident that if they do win, it's going to be a very low – I wouldn't say a low-scoring game, but a very close game, like 23-20 or something like that.
All right, we'll take that. What's a bigger game there in the Dallas area? Texas at USC or the in-city clash between TCU and SMU?
Texas-USC. As much as the local fans like TCU, SMU, their fan bases are still very small. I think if I read a stat that if you were to take all the TCU Living alumni, that wouldn't even fill up the Longhorn Stadium. So that just kind of goes to show you the size differences in the schools. Look, we talked a lot about both games, but for sure, you know, the Longhorns have got, you know, well over, they got 500,000 to 1 million fans in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, so far more that game.
Tom Herman, what's the impression what he's making so far on the fan base?
Not much. There's still a segment of the fan base thinks Charlie Strong got wronged by getting fired. But, you know, if you look at it, Tom Herman came in and you know, he has gotten the cupboard's much more full than it was when Charlie Strong took over from Mac Brown. They had kind of let things slip. But when you look at it, I mean, he just didn't get the job done week one. Now, they had a much better game week two against San Jose State, but it's a different animal now. Now you're going to USC. Maryland put 51 on them. I can only imagine what USC is going to do, especially a game on the road. It's the first road game for Tom Herman. But, you know, look, I mean, the fans are going to give him the obligatory 3 years, and then they'll make a decision. Fortunately, they made their decision on Charlie Strong. Seems to be before 3 years is up.
Yeah, they did. It's difficult. Year two, you got to win at Texas. Everybody gets year one. You can blame everything on the coach from the past, but year two, he's going to have to win. So we'll see. 15.5 points, the number in this game. So we'll see if Texas can keep it close. RJ Choppy in Dallas, great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Where you'll find Jason Anderson soaking his head, ESPN 680. Jason, how are you, sir?
Doing fine, Seren. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. How is Louisville? Are they ready for Clemson to come in? Are they ready for game day to be there for this game?
You know, I don't know about you, Seren, but this is old hat to the Louisville fans. This is year two in a row having game day, so they feel like, you know, they've done this before. They've been down this road. It's not nearly the excitement as it was. I'm just joking. It's pumped. The city has been on fire all week when they announced the game day was going to be here. And then because Florida State-Miami got postponed, they moved the game from 3:30 to 8. And for years, Seren, Louisville fans have been clamoring for a night game. They just don't get Saturday night games at all in Louisville. They're always playing noon games. Last year, game day, Florida State was a noon game. So the fact that it's an 8 o'clock game and game day there, and they feel like they've got an opportunity, sort of a redo against Clemson, where they fell a yard short last year. They feel like at home, no Deshaun Watson, reigning Heisman winner, that they've got a pretty decent chance to win this game, and feel like because of DeAndre Francois, they're in the driver's seat in the Atlantic.
We know they can score. Can they stop anybody, Louisville, I'm talking
about? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's the big question is, they didn't stop anybody at North Carolina. Purdue put up 35 points on them as well, or 28, whatever it was, against Purdue when they were supposed to only score 10. Jeff Brom's a good coach. I think Missouri fans will find that out this weekend. But the defense is still a question mark. And the fact that Seren, their second-best player on Louisville's team, preseason AP All-American Jair Alexander cornerback, who caused 4 of the 5 Clemson turnovers last year in Death Valley, looks like he's not going to play in this game. He got injured against Purdue, didn't play last week. They're calling him day-to-day, but the guy's a first-round draft pick. I can't imagine him with a knee injury pushing it to play in this game. So I'm not expecting him to play. And if he doesn't, their second cornerback, their nickel cornerback, they are suspect, and I think they are compromised defensively without that guy out there on the field. So I don't think they could really stop a lot of people with Jair Alexander out there. And the fact that he's not out there, I wonder what Kelly Bryant and Clemson's offense is going to be able to do.
So was it just a smokescreen when there were reports out there that Lamar Jackson was going to really work on being more of a pocket passer? I mean, it was like the scariest thing ever if you wanted to bet Louisville, to hear that the guy who really what makes him great is his ability to run around and have that threat of the run, that he was going to make himself a pocket passer. I mean, that seems to have been what killed every running quarterback in the NFL, is when they just are committed to staying in the pocket. He hasn't done that. 19 carries, 132 on the ground, and 3 touchdowns. Was that just a PR campaign to kind of throw some people off, or is that something they still want to do, and it's just been too easy for them to run so far?
I don't know if it's necessarily make him a pocket passer. Like, it's not the extreme of what Pinkel tried to do with Brad Smith when it was like, if you get outside the pocket, we're blowing the play dead. They want him to be a better pocket passer because they know Louisville's offense becomes that much more dangerous when he does that, because a year ago, he was only completing around 50% of his passes. I mean, he had a strong arm. He was accurate from time to time, but his footwork was terrible. And unlike Teddy Bridgewater, he would fade away when pressure got to him if he couldn't escape. And that was one of the things that I loved about Teddy, is he would face the blitz, stay in the pocket, deliver the pass, and then take the hit. Lamar really didn't do that last year. He's doing that a lot better this year. His footwork is better. His accuracy is up to mid-60s, which is where it needs to be. And he's escaping and using his legs when need be. It's not one read and run like it was last year. It's one read, two read, swing pass to the running back, not there, pressure is here, let me get out of the pocket and run because, oh, by the way, I'm still the reigning Heisman winner. So he's always going to get his numbers that way, Sorin. It's the matter of him being two-dimensional now as opposed to strictly a pocket passer like he did against North Carolina. He can step up in the pocket and complete a 75-yard pass that hits Jalen Smith on a dime deep. And that's the arm strength and the accuracy from time to time is what Lamar Jackson showed last year. It's happening much more often in the first 2 weeks of the season this year.
Clemson defensive tackles Christian Wilkins and Dexter Lawrence were both first-team All-Americans on my AP ballot for the preseason All-American team. Does Louisville, who has, I think, three new starters, right, on the offensive line, do they have what it takes to handle those two?
Yeah, three new starters, and two of those true freshmen. One of those being center true freshman Robbie Bell, who will be lining up against those two guys in the middle. Look, those guys can start for a defensive team or for an NFL team right now. And the question I have is, this is where it comes down to Bobby Petrino being a play caller versus Brent Venables as a defensive coordinator. I don't know what Gus Malzahn was doing by having Stidham sit in the pocket for as long as he did and having the slow developing routes, because 8 of the 11 sacks for Clemson came on rushing four guys. So good luck with that if that's what you're going to plan on doing. I can't imagine Bobby Petrino would even think about doing that with Lamar Jackson. He is great with the underneath crossing routes. He throws swing passes to running backs all the time. He loved the wheel route. And unlike Stidham, Lamar Jackson does the zone read where they can read either Farrell or Austin Bryant as the defensive end and give it or keep it himself. So I think they will try to mitigate that defensive line as much as possible, keep them moving side to side instead of getting vertical, as opposed to what Auburn did where it allowed them to just peel their ears back, as they say, and just get after the quarterback. So that offensive line holding up against that defensive line, I think it's crucial to whether or not Louisville even has a chance in this game.
All right, let's talk about the Kentucky Wildcats. They've got a big game at South Carolina. A lot of people saying, okay, this is the year. They're finally ready to rise up and really maybe create some noise in the SEC. And the SEC East might be wide open with Florida suspensions. Tennessee, everybody thinks Butch Jones is coaching for his job. Georgia looks the best on paper, I think, but they're also considered like kind of a paper tiger that they always disappoint. 24-17 over Southern Miss, 27-16 over Eastern Kentucky. Tell me, is that a team that's just keeping everything on the shelf, waiting to unleash it here against South Carolina, or is all the talk a little bit much?
The latter. The talk has been a little bit too much. We've had people on the air, Kentucky media, that are like, I think they can go 8-4, maybe 9-3. I'm like, in what century are they going to go 8-4 and 9-3? The number that keeps getting thrown around, Seren, that is just regurgitated without any research, is Kentucky's returning 19 starters. No, they're not. They lost the debt to Oklahoma. Dorian Baker got injured. Cole Mosher got injured. Alvante Bell was kicked off the team. And Boom Williams is in the NFL. That's five guys that people keep talking about, 19 returning starters. That means they have 14. Roughly what a lot of other teams have is 14 returning starters for this Kentucky team. Offensively, the offensive line isn't as good as it was last year. They don't have Boom Williams or JoJo Kemp. They have just Benny Snell, who was a change of pace power back. Now he is the back. And Steven Johnson is an okay quarterback, but he's not a passer, and he was a guy that played off the play action in the run, which no longer is viable for Kentucky to pound it and play their entire offense through their offensive line. And defensively, it's still the same bad defense that we've seen with Mark Stoops as a defensive mind since he's been at Kentucky. So I didn't see the 8-4. I thought this team was 6-6, maybe 7-5 if they pulled off a victory here or there. And what I've seen the first 2 weeks makes me think that 5-7 or even 4-8 is a possibility. We'll see. Maybe they are holding things close to the vest. Maybe this is playing vanilla the first 2 weeks and going to South Carolina. But what I saw from the Gamecocks against Missouri, I don't think Kentucky goes there and stays in the game.
All right, 10 words or less. Did you dump your diaper when you saw Missouri was favored by a touchdown over Purdue?
Yeah, I think that was it. Look, when they were favored over South Carolina, I'm like, yeah, let me get excited, because if Vegas has been favored, I feel like the money's going to pour in on South Carolina, and Vegas was like setting up the hook. Missouri's right. Going to win that game. All right, whatever. I love Jeff Brohm. I will be honest. I am biased for that. He's really good. He's always been nice to me. He sends me texts and offers me tickets all the time. So obviously biased from that standpoint. I don't think Purdue is nearly as good as they'll be in a couple of years. But the fact that that offense was putting up numbers they were against Louisville, and I think Louisville's defense is better than Missouri's, I think it's going to be a ball game. And the fact that it's 7, I think, says that Vegas thinks this thing's going to be back and forth, and that scares me if I'm Missouri. Quite frankly, I have no confidence in them winning this weekend.
Got to work on your counting. That was a little more than 10, but
well,
a good analysis.
10 for me.
I like the Jeff Brohm breakdown, too. Clearly man crush is in effect there with you.
Absolutely.
Jason Anderson in Louisville, great stuff as always, my friend. Have a great weekend.
Anytime, Seren. You too.